Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to Calcio e Cappuccino, available wherever you get your podcasts. We are here, Christine Cupo, Dre Cordero, and extra special Serie A teammate Michele Grella. That's a pop on if, in fact, we get this together this week, you know? We are going to run through a bit of match day 13, assess some Champions League grades on our Italian squads, and do a bit of a preview for this week. If you've not yet subscribed to P+, it's your time to hit that UEFA 22 promo code for your free month. Saturday, we'll have coverage on Paramount Plus from 12:30 with Dre and Matteo doing all of the heavy lifting on the Atalanta-Napoli match, as well as Sunday in the studio from 11 a.m. on CBS Sports Network and Paramount Plus until 5:30. Dre, are your vocal cords prepared to work this weekend? I mean, that's a lot, bud.
To be determined. Coming back from a little bit of a cold, but we got through Tuesday's Champions League match between Olympique Marseille and Tottenham. So I'm confident that we will be ready to go for what is, I don't think it's hyperbolic to say, the biggest weekend we've had of Serie A so far this season. Three absolutely fire games. The biggest of them is on Saturday with Atalanta against Napoli, and then a doubleheader on Sunday with the Derby della Capitale and the Derby d'Italia. And just everything is lined up so beautifully that these teams, all three matchups, have teams that are right next to each other on the table, starting with Atalanta and Napoli, second against first in Bergamo. It's just going to be absolutely massive. So whether my voice is ready or not, we've got to go after
ready
it. And
not,
if I am, if I'm hoarse on Sunday morning, we'll still power through and give it that nice, raspy, dulcet tone.
I know you'll give it your best. I will be listening in very, very closely. I will prepare notes for you. Grella, how are you feeling today, bud?
I feel amazing. How's everyone else doing?
Great, now that you're here. I mean, you got on seamlessly. I can't talk today. No tech glitches.
That was the least believable thing I've ever heard, Mike Grella. I've heard him say some. I've heard him say that like Inter were going to win by 20 points. I've heard him say a lot of weird things, and I believe that before I believe what he just told us about. I feel wonderful. I'm happy you're here, Grella, because I'm going to lean on you heavily for these three games that we have coming up on the weekend in Serie A. But I think we should start with the Champions League group stage, which just wrapped up. Before we give some grades to the four Italian Champions League teams, just big picture overall, did Serie A perform better, worse, or as expected for you, Grella, in the group stage this time out?
I have high expectations for the Serie A teams, and I think they have a very talented group of players, and I obviously love the league. I've followed the league my entire life, so I have high expectations for them, so I think they performed as I expected. I felt like three teams would go through. I didn't think Juventus would be the one that fell through, crashed through, and poor record form. I mean, they broke records for all the wrong reasons in the Champions League group, and almost I don't even know if going to Europa League now is the best thing for them, considering at the state that they're in. And they got through to the Europa League with 3 points, which was it was sad actually, and the performances were poor. So I didn't expect Juventus to perform the way they did, but I was happy with the other three Italian teams. I thought they represented Italy and Italian football really well.
So full disclosure, I was the only one that I think said that they didn't anticipate Juve making it through the group stage. Who were your unlikely of the four, Mike?
I mean, listen, we all have very short memories. We just not long ago, everyone on the panel and everyone on the show, I think most people in here as well, didn't have Napoli in the top four in the Serie A. So I had questions about Napoli, to be honest, and that was the biggest question mark. And instead, they were the best team in Europe, not just in Italy.
Yeah, I mean, they had almost an entirely perfect group stage run, which the last time that that actually happened was in 1992, and that was Milan that managed to pull that off. So I think all in, the Italian teams fared well. I am especially proud, but I was a little bit disappointed that Liverpool robbed Napoli of that distinct honor in this our year of 2022.
So let's do the easy one first then. What grade would you give Napoli for their Champions League group stage, Kupo?
Oh, A plus. They were absolute warriors. I am never not impressed by them at this point. They are just such a fluid squad. They genuinely like each other, which is not something that you can manufacture. I think that they really, even across Serie A, to sort of double task that and be as dominant as they've been, chef's kiss.
Mike.
Yeah, I got them at an A+, the highest grade possible. 20 goals for the brand of football, the results, the style, passion when they played, the energy. I mean, A+. It couldn't be any better in reality.
I'll give them the A. I want to give them an A+, and I think it's a ridiculous standard not to give it to them, but just the fact that they set the bar so high with the way that they played in those first five games to then lose at Anfield.
Yeah, for me, I think Milan was a B+, no question about it. The games against Chelsea, you know, leave you wanting more because of the way they play football. They played, very athletic, very modernized football, young team, covers a lot of ground, and it's exciting. And to see them go up against Chelsea twice and have two very poor performances, that was a difficult one. But in the end of the day, they went to Dynamo, they won. Dynamo hadn't been beaten in 20-something games at home. They beat them. They took care of Salzburg at home 4-0, made it look easy. So when they needed to really step on the gas, they showed that they had another level. And so I give them a A- or B+.
Yeah, I think I'm with you in that grading. I just feel like maybe it's a little bit of recency bias. Just that FC Salzburg match, they shined like you know that Milan can. And also, this is Milan's first, you know, movement onto the round of 16 in almost a decade, finishing second in their group, which no complaints, obviously. They're playing very good football. Giroud, the hero, as usual, yesterday. Nice to see that at his big age, he's still an integral part of that squad. I think for me, where it starts to fall off a little bit is I think with Inter, I feel like, yes, good, but I don't think that I can rate them as highly. So I think for me, and I don't think that they did have the misfortune of having to play Bayern. Bayern consistently, giants in Bundesliga. But I think for me, they're probably a solid B. I don't know. Dre, what do you think about Inter all in for this Champions League run?
Yeah, I'm going A for Napoli. 20 goals, which is five more than Real Madrid scored. It's basically beyond their wildest imagination that Napoli would do as well as they did against the competition that they did. And I'm going B minus for Inter. B minus because I think they took advantage, played brilliantly defensively in both legs, especially the first meeting against Barcelona. I think they had a perfectly executed game plan against Barca, but it was a depleted Barca. A Barca still trying to like find their identity, missing key pieces. The reason I'm going B minus and not a little bit lower is because without Marcelo Brozovic, we all had serious questions about how this Inter would play, whether they would function. Çalhanoğlu slotted into that role and did brilliantly. The shootout essentially in the second half against Barcelona was some of the most fun that we've seen in the entirety of the Champions League. So B minus for Inzaghi's men, who I think like revitalized their campaign as a result of those two games with Barcelona, right? Because we were talking about whether Inzaghi would make it to Christmas, whether they had made a mistake in replacing Antonio Conte with him. All of the optimism and positivity that Inter went into the season with, having brought back Lukaku, the questions that were raised about the injuries of Brozovic, the injuries to Lukaku, I think all of that dissipated when they did as well as they did in this group stage. So I think B minus, and those are the two highest grades that I'm giving for the Italian teams in this group stage.
Grella, where did you think Inter fell in this Champions League group stage?
Yeah, if you really follow Serie A and you saw how bad Inter struggled, we all had them winning the Scudetto again. Most people did, and Vegas had them as the favorites to win the Scudetto, and we thought they would probably breeze it. So see how poorly they were playing. They lose Lukaku. They play him poorly in the league, dropping points to smaller teams in the league, and losing games at home. You know, to see them respond that way in a group that is with Bayern Munich and Barcelona is incredible. And you know, usually it's the other way around. You do well in the league and then you use that in the Champions League. They used the Champions League against two very good sides to find their form back in the Serie A. So that was impressive to me. The response was impressive to me. And so I have to give them maybe slightly lower than Milan, because Milan made it look a little bit easier. But the bravery, you know, listen, I know Barcelona was not at its best, but to go to Camp Nou and perform and play in such an exciting match, you have to show a lot of character and bravery. I think Inter did that in the group stages, and now they become a very difficult opponent in this knockout format, because they're just good all over. So B minus, and let's leave Milan at A minus.
B plus. All right. I think that a few episodes back we had talked about sort of the walking wounded after the international break, and we did an assessment of Inter, and we talked a lot about Brozovic's importance to that squad. I think for me, the most surprising player to emerge as sort of this like metronome for them had been Calhanoglu. And I feel like he gets a lot of flack. I don't know, Grella, what do you think about him sort of stepping up into that role?
I remember watching him when he was playing higher up in the field where probably is more his natural position. And in a few games, I saw him like have a really amazing reaction to a lost ball and a lot of bite in his tackle. And, you know, that's not a normal thing. I was an attacking player, and it was just not my nature at all to go to ground and win a ball, or I was not a good tackler at all. I mean, I'm probably not a good player just in general. But to see him have that little bit of that characteristic and that nature in him that's, like, very sharp and rough and can be a little nasty at times – was surprising, and to see him actually go now further back in the field where you're going to make more tackles and be deeper in the field, to see him play so well is almost not so much a surprise, because of, you know, he did show flashes of it in the further up positions as well. So again, just there's no one in the world that can strike a ball better than him, but now he's showing these defensive characteristics and playing deeper that are really attractive to teams and clubs all over the world, and he's been fantastic from start to finish.
I think Baena's probably picked up a lot of the slack too, right? Because I think Hakan can do some of the things that Brozovic does, but Brozovic almost like fills the role of two players in that Inter midfield. I think the way that Barella stepped up his game like helped tremendously for Inter. And with Milan, I'll go C, only because I wanted them to be more competitive against Chelsea. Like, they just did not compete. And obviously, one of the games was conditioned by the early red card. The second game conditioned by Fikayo Tomori's red card, 17 minutes in. But even he has himself to blame a little bit there, not getting goal side of Mason Mount, allowing him to be completely beaten by it. They obviously qualify relatively comfortably, right? They finished 4 points ahead of Salzburg, who were in third place. But just, I'm left with a bad taste in my mouth after the two games against Chelsea, where they just seemingly did not complete. So, see, it's a passing grade. It's basically what I did in school, just enough to get by. But the fact that they're finally back in the Champions League knockout stages, Milan for the first time in 9 seasons, the fact that they won back-to-back Champions League games for the first time in more than a decade. And, you know, we were heaping praise on Calhanoglu. I think we should do the same on Olivier Giroud, who's just been sensational for Milan, a guy who was supposed to come in and be, you know, a challenge Slaven Ibrahimovic for a starting spot, a rotational guy who can get in. You know, was he over the hill? Can he continue to produce at a high level? At 36 years old, he's been arguably the most important player in the Champions League. And he has a part to play in all four goals against Salzburg, scores two, assists two. The second the assist to Radi Krunic with 41 seconds into the second half is massive. It's timely. It really settles Milan down, and it just means the world to them. And so now they're talking about giving him potentially a contract extension. If there's a league where you can have a 36-year-old sign a contract extension and feel good about it, it's Serie A, where Luca Toni won Capocannonieri trophy after the age of 36, where Totti played until he was 40, where Toto Di Natale wasn't even that great until he was into his 30s. So I think Giroud has been just more than Milan could have imagined when they signed him, and probably a big part of the reason why Milan are through.
Dre, I love this song. Go ahead, Grella.
Sorry, Christine. Did you give them a C? You gave Milan a C?
Yeah, Milan get a C.
Oh, my God. You're grumpy today, man. You know,
they didn't compete against Chelsea. Listen, I would love to, and I'll let you guys keep. I'll go back to bed. You guys finish this podcast. But you're supposed to beat Dinamo Zagreb and RB Salzburg if you're Milan. And I wouldn't say you're supposed to beat Chelsea, but you're supposed to compete against Chelsea, and they did not. So, yeah, they get a passing grade.
They're a little bit robbed the one game, you know, at home. I think that's difficult. But, yeah, they did. They'd have that one poor performance against Chelsea. But, again, nine seasons, not qualifying. Milan now qualifying and, you know, showing some moments of good football. And then again, Dinamo Zagreb at home was unbeaten in something like 20-something games. So I think they could deserve a little bit better than a C. Also, you know, I want to try to get on the good side of the Milan fans, because I have a lot of Milan fans that say that I'm an Interista. So, but it's not true.
Well, speaking of, I give them a C, and a wild Bonetti appears.
Matteo, help us. Dre has assessed a crime upon Milan in their Champions League performance with an actual C.
Yeah, give them a grade.
I'm glad the CBS Sports account finally requested me. I was there waiting for 5 minutes. Thanks for waking up there, Ryan. Much appreciated. Thanks for letting me in. It's an honor.
He said, who are you?
Exactly. No, I feel massively disrespected now. I'm going to pull my inner diva out. See, you know what? C feels like a fair grade, but I almost want to go B minus. And my only reason for that is because I look at the last 10 years. And at the end of the day, guys, you know that a team needs experience in the Champions League. They need to have it as a unit. Last year, they looked like a fish out of water in the group stage. And it's because it was their first year since 2014 that they went to the Champions League. This is only year two that Milan have finished in the top four. And they finished second, by the way, behind a team that spent $500 million this summer in the transfer market that still apparently wants to buy everybody. So I feel totally fine with Milan finishing exactly where they should have finished, in second place. There's no way they were going to finish first in that group. I think that's probably a B. It's not excellent, but it's good enough.
It's also the how.
A commendable effort. I think that be high on Milan. But go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, so listen, this is not an indictment on Milan's entire season. I'm grading what they did in the Champions League. And in the Champions League, they needed goals from players like Salamakers, like Pobega, to beat or to draw against teams that they should comfortably beat, or at least, without needing the recourse of Salamakers looking like a starter for the Belgian national team at the World Cup.
Why was Tatarushanu and Pobega and all these other guys playing? Because that's the worst injury crisis that they've had in the entire Stefano Pioli era.
So my question then is, where was the reigning MVP of Serie A in those games? Why were they needing the Pobegas and the Salamakers or penalties from Olivier Giroud as opposed to Leao taking over matches the way that he did in Serie A last season en route to the first title in over a decade?
If this was the NBA and you had LeBron James who could take over a game, but when you're playing in 10 men and the referee went completely against you with one of the worst calls in Champions League history, then the team is forced to play on the back foot. There's nothing Leao can do. And look, I'm right there with you. Sure, there could have been some moments that Leao could have gone back to that world-class form that he showed last season. But, I mean, it is against Chelsea at the end of the day. Like, what do we try to do? The team is ready without five or six starters, depending on how you look at it.
Right, so
they're down.
Maybe we're splitting hairs. Maybe we're splitting hairs because, no, okay, let's not get carried away. I'm not blaming Leao. I'm giving them a passing grade. I'm giving them a C, and you're giving them a grade.
Right, listen, I would have been a C. No parent is happy with a C. I know you were a C student, and
100%.
You wanted to go back and like play revisionist history and pretend like a C is a passing grade. A C sucks. No one's happy with a C.
You don't repeat the grade, though. You pass it.
No, I'm not buying it. Is Grella, speaking of C students, where the hell is Grella?
Matteo, come stai?
I'm sorry. I didn't want to interrupt you from par or golf course hole number 8. I hope everything's good.
Everything is fantastic. No. Yesterday was yesterday. Today, I am fully devoted to the Twitter space. I want to make sure that, you know, Dre doesn't give too many low grades. I agree with you, man. I think Dre is being a little harsh on Milan. But again,
do you remember when we were
you got a greeting on a curve,
guys? When we weren't critical of Milan against RB Salzburg in that draw away from home, and the producers came to us and said, you know, I think you guys are being way too nice here. And we actually had a big disagreement about it. I'm curious to know what other people feel about this. Like,
no, I think the producers are always right. So that's impossible. Yeah.
Well, is it like the customer's always right? The producer's always right.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So if we're giving away like easy grades here, like the friendliest professors ever, what were you guys in my college? What are we giving you there? What are we giving Juve for finishing third in group?
What's an F?
D.
D,
I'm giving him a D. Yeah.
D because of the Europa League. No, that is a solid F.
I mean, it was abysmal. I'm not going to pretend like it wasn't. I think that I'm giving them a D for the sake of Chiesa's return, which makes a massive difference. Locatelli's performance, because God help them, if he just manages to get some teammates that actually function with him, we might actually have something there. And for the youth that have actually shown a lot of promise. So Gatti, Sule needs to knuckle up a little bit. I think that because of how poorly they had been performing and the atypical nature of actually getting the young players on field, that's been promising.
was Juventus's group stage campaign a failure, yes or no?
Yes.
So that's an F. I don't know. I don't know what school you went to, Christine, but F failure, not finishing top two when they should have. They were clearly the second best team.
Wait. They were clearly the second best team when? This season? No.
No. In the group stage, there's in no world should Benfica be ahead of them in any sort of power ranking. By the way,
you're going on reputation.
We're not going back to 2010. Let's go back to August when the bookies, right? The people who have all the analytics and data, and this is about making money. So you better believe that those odds are made as accurate as they can be. Juventus were actually the Serie A favorites to win the Scudetto. So of course they were the second team to try to get out of that group.
Matteo, you're disrespecting Benfica, I think, to a degree that Benfica drew both games against Paris. How did Juve do?
Definitely talk about Maccabi Haifa in that context. Like, for sure, Juve should have very easily beat them. But Benfica, Porto, Juve do not have great records playing those kinds of squads.
Right. They've underachieved the last four seasons, losing against teams they were favored against every single time in the round of 16 when they got out of the group stage.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing To grow in your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
It's still, yeah. You know what? I think Matteo's being disrespectful to Benfica, but it is an F for Juventus. You don't get credit for finishing ahead of Maccabi Haifa, and you don't get credit for having played well against Paris in the final round. And you can build on that and then win the Derby d'Italia. That sort of helps you out. But this was an abysmal campaign for a club that has the history, the tradition. The shirt alone should sort of lift these players to perform better. And I know that the injuries played a huge part, Matteo. If you're going to talk about the injuries to Milan, then you have to sort of factor in the injuries to Juve, which arguably are more significant because of what players they were.
So Pioli, this is a funny meme, right? Is that Allegri said, let's see how Inter and Milan do with the amount of injuries we've had. Then Milan had even more injuries than Juventus and won that game and got out of the group stage in the Champions League. I agree with you, Dre, that there has to be a point made, and I'm glad you brought it up, that yes, they have had some of their key players missing, but never is that going to be an excuse for losing against or drawing against teams that are expected to get relegated from Serie A. No, I don't want to hear it.
I'm like, I mean, you happen to have a point in a lot of ways, but I just think that
no, don't back down.
The reason that bookies had Juve winning the Scudetto is because the squad that they had assembled going into the season was formidable. Unfortunately, when you lose people that are key to play in any way, shape, or form in competing, where you have a Pogba that's literally been vacationing on the bench since he's gotten there, Chiesa, who, I mean, they really, really needed him season over season to be performing. And then the onslaught of injuries that just continued to pile up to the extent that now we have entire graphics that look like a starting 11 that are actually the injured for Juve. There's no way to actually compete like that, irrespective of how much depth you go in.
There's one thing competing for Scudetto, and I agree that they don't look anywhere close to that, but it's another thing picking up points against the Salernitana and not getting destroyed by Monza, a team that was just promoted from Serie B. Like, if we're going pound for pound, individual player against individual player, Juventus is in another stratosphere.
Let's move on, because we're diagnosing all of Juve's season right now, which is not what we intended to do. So let's get a grade from Grilla and move on to the weekend.
Wait, hold up, because this is a good segue. Juve making Europa League. Today, we still have Europa League competitions. Roma need to win today. They're right now in third. They'll finish second with a win today. Fiorentina are through, and then Lazio need to pick up at least a point today off of Feyenoord. And that would round off the Serie A clubs still competing in Europe, which is laudable, quite frankly. I know that people like to discount Europa League, but quite frankly, that's a lot of Serie A happening. Nobody, huh? Nope, nobody.
I want to give my grade for Juventus anyway.
Yeah, please.
They're expelled. No grade. Yeah. Expelled from school. Kicked out.
Incomplete.
Yeah, that's it. There's nothing to talk about. Everyone who knows football can see what's going on. So, and it's not pretty, but hopefully they can build and start, like you say, get something in the game with Inter and work from there. But it's going to be, I think, a bumpy road for at least a year.
Yeah, I did not see us going 25 minutes on the stupid grades for the Champions League. Yeah. So let's move on to what is the biggest weekend we've had in Serie A, and it's taken us a while to get here. This season, this is undoubtedly the biggest round so far. You've got first against second leading the way on Saturday. Matteo, you and I will be on the call for that. Do you agree with me that this is the biggest game of the weekend, even though we have the Derby della Capitale and the Derby d'Italia, and we'll be on all three? Matteo, leave us.
No, I'm right here. Sorry, can you say that again? I got interrupted by a very loud scream in my house.
The Atalanta-Napoli game is the game of the weekend in Serie A, and it has a stage all to itself for us on Saturday.
Yeah, no, it does. And it's one of those games that I think you look forward to more so than some of the biggest ones, right? Maybe more so than an Inter-Juventus, just because of the quality that we know that we're going to get. Atalanta have been back to the team that we've known since 2016. And if you thought that last summer was a blip, right now it looks like you may be right, just because the way that they're playing, the confidence that this team has once again under Gasperini, the interchangeable parts, and hosting in a great stadium, by the way, with one of the best atmospheres in Serie A, the show of Europe, the most entertaining team, I think, right now in world football, with my favorite player to watch, Kvaratskhelia. This is by far the game that I'm most excited about, and most fans would say that it is just the third biggest game in Serie A this weekend.
Grilla.
Sorry, Dre, what's your question? You want to know which the biggest game is?
That's not how this works, man. I'm not interviewing you. I'm not here to ask you questions and you respond to them. We're here to have a conversation about the weekend in Serie A. Hey, we're both looking forward to Atalanta Napoli, and I just want your thoughts on this game. So I don't have a question for you.
Okay. And hey, you guys can see me, because also, you know, we have you see me in video, so you know I'm not, I'm actually paying attention. I think those are the concussions kicking in. So, I think, like, listen, they're all fantastic matches. The Atalanta Napoli, they both deserve to be where they're at. Atalanta, who's not playing in Europe, has that advantage of the rest and the time to prepare the match. And it does make a big difference. You see that every year with teams that are maybe not the biggest.
You see a different Atalanta this year, because Matteo says that they're back to being the team that they were. And I actually disagree with that. I don't think they're the same team that finished top three straight years. I think last year was a period of sort of reevaluation for Gasperini, and they've had a slightly different approach this year, and one that maybe in a sense is a little less exciting, but also more effective given some of the players they've lost along the way.
Whoa, Dre Cordero, you're putting words in my mouth right now, my man.
I quoted you verbatim.
Success on the field, not the style that they play. We've talked about this on commentary too. They can be way more vertical. They don't need as much possession. So I do agree with you there, Dre.
I think I think that before you two fight each other, I think get the gloves on. Atalanta last year and the seasons before that was like having a hole in your bucket. You know, you keep filling it with water and it keeps going out the other end. And this was the problem. They had a leaky defense and not playing really a realistic brand of football when it comes in terms of getting results, you know. And it's a brand of football where, you know, you have to outscore your opponent all the time. And it's fun to watch. But ultimately, and the oldest saying, and it's probably one of the oldest saying in sports, is that defense wins championships. And it's true. You have to protect what's yours first and then go out and try to and get the lead. And you see that now. They have one of the best defensive records in the league. They have a lot of grit and more maturity in the way they set up after they're leading 1-0, 2-0. I play for Jesse Marsh, who I think is one of the best American managers in the world. And it would drive me crazy because our whole thing was pressing the football and we'd be up 2-0 away from home and we continue to press the football. And we'd sometimes, most of the time, lose games or lose leads in big moments. And, you know, I think it was our Achilles heel that we stuck to what we were doing, pressing and playing with a high back line. When there's times where if you're winning, you have to protect and you have to play with two banks of four and play defensive and leave no space, you know, behind or between the lines. And I think Atalanta has done that now. They figured out, hey, look, we could still be dangerous in the attack, but we need to be more realistic defensively, just more, has more substance, more character in the defensive phases of the game.
I think go ahead.
I'm sorry. I think that's probably my weakness, is I love that style so much. Like, I like Gasperini. I like attacking ball. I like that verticality. Probably to a fault where, yeah, I could see just like conceding like crazy, just not defensively minded. But also, like, for Atalanta right now, Lookman is on fire. I love him. He's so enjoyable to watch. Like, that's the exciting part of ball, for me at least.
They have right now the second best defense in Serie A, right? Juve, against all prognosis, have the best defense in Serie A. Allegri ball, maybe that's more expected. But Atalanta and Lazio, Sarri and Gasperini are the two other managers with the best defensive record currently in Serie A. They're going up against Napoli, which scored 20 goals in the Champions League, have been lights out. Do you see, like, did Liverpool show any sort of weaknesses in Napoli, or were they just sort of do one because they've been so perfect in the Champions League? How does Napoli respond now after having a 23-game unbeaten streak snapped, the first loss since April, 13-game win streak in all competitions ended at Anfield? Now they're going again to a difficult place to play, although Atalanta, weirdly, last season and this are better away from home than they are at home. But do they just pick up where they left off here in Napoli with a really big opportunity to pull away at the top of Serie A?
Anyone? I think it will be very interesting to see if Atalanta gets the first goal and Napoli's away from home now and starts now to string potentially two losses together. I really want to see, I would really enjoy seeing that, not because I want to see Napoli lose. I love Napoli. I think they're playing great football. But I think I would love to see the reaction of the players, the young players that are very talented, that want to play very technical brand of football, a very attacking brand of football. I'd love to see their reaction in those moments that if they potentially can string two losses together in a difficult place to go, what that looks like. Because Napoli, again, they were very good last season as well. And people forget that they started the season in a similar fashion.
Yeah,
obviously not in the Champions League, but similar fashion, playing decent football and scoring a lot of goals and looked dangerous and unbeaten for a very long stretch. But unfortunately, once they started stringing together a couple losses in that November, December, difficult, you know, mid-season, obviously we won't have that this season, but we'll still have a middle of the season for them. You know, whether it's fatigue, whether it's mental fatigue, just seeing how they respond to not being perfect all the time, because they've had hot starts before, but they haven't been able to do it for the entire season. So seeing how they go now mentally after a loss and now a difficult game is going to be interesting to me. It's going to tell us a lot about the team.
They were level with Milan at the top of the table at this point last season, right? They'd gone unbeaten the first 12 rounds, and then it was right around here that things started to go sideways for them. And Milan also tripped up on match day 13 last year. But you're right. This is the point where, for all those people that have been saying it's the same, you know, we've seen Napoli get off the hot starts before and then fizzle out. Like, this is the moment where it's time to see if they could sustain this, which is seemingly unsustainable, right? Like, they've been pretty close to perfect throughout, and they don't have to be perfect for the rest of the season. But this is the opportunity now, because they're up against second place Atalanta, and they can open that gap at the top of the table.
I think I was very high on Napoli last season too, probably more optimistic than I should have been, because obviously Napoli have come out strong previously and not succeeded. But I think that this go round, they have a more complete squad. And I think that this atypical pause due to the World Cup shifting may actually work in their favor. I personally don't want to have them stress tested with a loss at this point. I think they need to continue their streak for the next couple of weeks going into World Cup. I just think that the morale all in, and again, just I think that if there are any weaknesses, Spalletti does not enjoy losing, and he has a hard time steering out of when things get bad. So I would like to have a more complete, positive Napoli season. Like,
are you doubling down on the comment from last week about Spalletti being sort of a weakness in the team? Because
I said if there were a weakness. I'm extremely high on Napoli, but I invite anybody to once again record this Twitter space and snip it out of context, because I thoroughly enjy that, as you do too. Well, I do adore
the reason I say this is because Spalletti's a strength for this Napoli team. He really is. Yeah. Like, his experience, his track record, especially for a team that's got all the changes that they've had over the course of the summer transfer window. So I'll give you a chance to either double down or clarify the comment, I guess.
No, I think we watched it last season, and I feel like when they start to not perform or lose, he has a hard time steering out of that, right? And that does have to do with the players at his disposal. So for me, I would like to see this go in a different trajectory over past seasons. I don't think that it's impossible. I'm not saying they're going to go entirely unblemished for the remainder of the season, but also, I quite frankly, they're still my Scudetto favorites for this season.
Gotcha. The thing that Napoli have going for them, one of the many things they have going for them, is that they were doing brilliantly even without Victor Osimhen, and he's come back and just can't stop scoring. He finally had his goal streak snapped at Anfield yesterday against Liverpool, but scored a hat-trick the game before that, his first hat-trick in Serie A, had scored in back-to-back games on his return before that. And so now they are back to being as deep as they should be in attack. Let's move on to the other two games, because we're almost running out of time here. Roma-Lazio, the fact that Sergio Milinkovic-Savic misses this game. What is Paulo Dybala's status, if anybody knows at the moment? It feels like the game hasn't come at the best moment for Roma or Lazio, or am I wrong about that?
I think that's the beauty of the Scudetto. The beauty of Scudetto is that the games are never going to come at the right time, ever, you know, and you have to show depth of squad, and you have to show character, and you have to show... Everybody wins in the club, you know. When I was playing, I was close friends with the physios, and I was, speaking to the people who make the food, and speaking to the people that cut the grass and take care of the grounds, and you're all a team. It's a massive club. It has nothing to do, not just to do with the 11 players that are playing. You know, it's the bench, it's the roster, it's the injured guys. It's, like I said, maintenance crew. It's everyone around the club. I mean, even the families and everything else. It's the club is more than the 11 players. So, yeah, the beauty of the Scudetto is in these moments when you don't have your best, because you're not going to always have your best week in and week out, is to show the character of the club and to show that you can get results, you know, with the... a lot of guys missing. I think that's why Roma, the Scudetto to me is the most one of the most difficult things you can win, or the league is one of the most difficult things you can win.
But these teams aren't in contention. Roma and Lazio are not in contention for the Scudetto, are they?
No, but where they finish is very important. You know, like to win the Scudetto, but where they finish, they're both you know, really want to finish in the top four.
Yeah, this is a top four clash with Roma currently fourth, Lazio fifth, trying to like leapfrog their city rivals. I wish that we could get this with, you know, Dybala and Sergio Milinkovic-Savic both fit, but there's still a lot of talent out there. What do you make of Tammy Abraham's season so far? He seemed to really like acclimate almost instantly to Serie A last year, and maybe not throttled in the same way this year.
Yeah. You know, strikers, what was the quote that you told me that Ray Hudson had said about strikers?
was it ketchup?
It's like an old pen, and you try it to see if you can make it work again. And if it doesn't, you just throw it out.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the funniest things I've heard, and it's very accurate as well. But with Tammy, strikers, you know, they go in and out, and it's a strange thing. You know, a certain striker can come into a different league, a different country, and be unbelievable. And then he goes somewhere else and he can't find goals and he can't find comfort. So there's a big mental factor with the strikers. And I think Tammy is probably going through a little bit of that now. Is, you know, he's going to have moments where he's hot, and he's going to have moments where he just can't find the back of the net. And right now he's just missing a lot of chances. And to me, it's completely down to mental. It's not down to, you know, application or determination or his motivation. I think that's all there. I think when you play for Mourinho, that's a must. But mentally, yeah, for sure, he's going through a very bad moment because he's missing chances and he's finding himself in the wrong places and he just can't get himself going.
The part that had me so optimistic about him and what he would do for an encore is Roma have more playmakers now, right? The rival of Dybala, when you look at what their best 11 would be with everybody fit, Lorenzo Pellegrini is one of the best, you know, playmakers in Serie A. Spinazzola coming back and being healthy, you know, someone who could play off the edge. It just seemed like everything was there for Tammy to really take advantage. And maybe he will, but he really hasn't.
No, he hasn't. And there's been a lot of new pieces. And then again, like, there's players like, maybe I'm going to get a little heat for this one too. But, you know, Pellegrini, has he been the best playmaker in Serie A? I mean, I know Mourinho says he wished he had 11 of them. I know that he is a top quality player, a national team, fantastic talent. But has he been fantastic week in and week out for Roma? I mean, I can't say that he has. That's one of them. That's another guy that I think is just getting a little overrated. And sort of just flying under the radar a lot of the times.
Let's wrap up if we can squeeze it in the Derby d'Italia, right? The biggest game in Italy. it's not necessarily the biggest game this weekend. But how much do you read into the way that Juventus performed? This time I will ask you a question, Grella, so you can treat this as an interview. But how much do you read into the way that they performed against Paris? No moral victories. Obviously, they crash out of the Champions League. But it does seem like with Chiesa coming in and looking as sharp as he did in a few minutes, he's expected to play maybe 30-ish minutes in the Derby d'Italia. They, according to Allegri, should have Bremer and Vlahovic and Di Maria back. Like, we're going to, even if it's just for a few minutes in the second half, maybe get a glimpse of what Juve we're supposed to have and are supposed to be this season. And it comes at a moment where, you know, it's their biggest match of the campaign so far, taking on Inter, and they're at home. Can that carry over from one game to the next, or do we now see the same sort of conservative defensive approach as Juve, who are, by the way, within striking distance of making it to the top four? Do they sort of revert to what we've come to expect under Max Allegri?
I think that we were there last season when there was a big moment. Juventus actually from nowhere had this really crazy outside shot to win the Scudetto or to be in the conversation. And Inter played in Torino in a massive moment. And I'll never forget, Allegri played much more attacking. You know, he put Morata as like almost a left midfielder, and they attacked. I think whoever watched that game will remember the first 20 minutes. Everyone was like, wow, Juventus were fantastic. And they opened up, and then they ended up losing that game 1-0. And so I think that Allegri has his hesitations to play in these big matches and open up again. It's not in his nature just to begin with, but I think for sure what we'll see this weekend is a very defensive Juventus side. And I think the ramifications for this match are much bigger than the 3 points, because it's two teams that are very good, that are a little bit desperate at the moment to kick on their season, win a big game, and get going. And Inter got the best of Juventus last season in the Supercoppa Italiana and even in the Serie A. But they're both in a very similar situation right now, which is not at their best. So a win here could mean a lot more than the 3 points in the big picture.
Cool. I mean, I think this will be an interesting match, because it's nice to see Chiesa back. And I forgot about this like sort of look of determination. Like, the man is on fire when he's playing. And I think I missed that from the Juve side. But I think that one of the other brighter spots was seeing Miretti, Fagioli, and Locatelli working together, which if in fact dare Allegri be that bold, could work out fairly well, I think, against Inter. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this particular derby. I'm very neutral, I'll say. I think that it's going to be... I don't think that it's going to be determinant of the be all end all of what the rest of the season will look like, but I think that it'll be a certain indication, especially with, you know, Di Maria, Vlahovic, Chiesa back and up and running.
What do you want to tell the people what we have this weekend so we can get out of here?
Sure. Saturday, Paramount Plus from 12:30, you can catch Jorge Mateo on the Atalanta-Napoli match. And Sunday, 11 a.m. on CBS Sports Network and Paramount Plus, running until 5:30. We have full broadcast, and then we, of course, have Jorge and Mateo using their magical vocal cords, calling those three matches in a row. If you haven't yet used your promo for your free month for P+, you're going to want to use UEFA22. Do not miss Match Day 13 action. Thank you to everyone. Thanks, Grella, for your invaluable input and your undivided attention.
Oh no, my pleasure. Happy to be on here, and it's a lot of fun. And where's Mateo though? Is he still on or no?
No, he's been gone.
Jumped.
We ran out of money to keep him on here. Huh? he only does 10 minutes. He's too expensive for us.
Grazie mille from all of us. Catch Dre, Frella, and the rest of the team on the broadcast this weekend. We will see you next week. Ciao a tutti.
Ciao.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.